Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
NFL Live, progress for Dak and Dallas. The two sides continue to negotiate in good faith, but when can we expect a deal to get done? Tom Brady is a Buck, but hear how the process unfolded and why TB12 made it very clear he was all in on Tampa. And another milestone for former Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa and his efforts to show his health won't be an issue come draft day. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NFL Live. Happy to have you with us on this final Monday in March. I'm Wendy Nix. Marcus Spears, Lewis Riddick, Chris Mortensen, and Dan Graziano all with us this afternoon, where we start with developments in Dallas. As reported last week, negotiations between the Cowboys and their quarterback have resumed, and both sides seem genuinely committed to getting this deal done. Prescott would likely become the league's highest-paid player in the short term, but, of course, there are other sticking points in a deal of this magnitude. Dan, I'll start with you and the latest on the negotiations between Dak and the Cowboys.
Yeah, they've been talking, Wendy, and I think they're at the point where the trick is going to be the structure of the deal, the length of the deal, how the money is allocated. I mean, we've talked about, would he be the highest paid player? Would he be close to the highest paid player? The sense I get from talking to people on both sides of this is that that's not the critical issue at this point. It's more about how much money gets paid in the first 2 years, the first 3 years, how long the deal is, how short the deal is. So they're at that stage. Neither side feels the pressure to do anything too soon. The next deadline is July 15th. If they don't get a deal done by then, they're not allowed by rule to negotiate with their franchise player until after the season. But there is a belief on both sides that it can and will get done. I think they're at the point where they're trying to figure out how it's structured, and that's a good sign for ultimately how it'll work out.
Dan, thank you. Lewis Riddick, how would you approach this right now?
Yeah, I think if you're the Dallas Cowboys, obviously, because of the fact that there's be anyone in your facility, you were probably even more inclined to kind of maybe like play the long game here and take it all the way to July 15th if need be, because no one's going to be around anyway. Now, had there been different set of circumstances that weren't influenced by the global pandemic that's going on right now, and your offseason program is beginning, you know, getting ready to get started since you have a new head coach and you're able to start early, you would want to get this done much sooner because you would want Dak Prescott in the building. You would want him learning the new offense, or really it's still the old offense, but being around some of the new coaches and being around his teammates. So your sense of urgency may be much different had that been the case. If you're Dak Prescott, you're really not inclined to do anything right now besides to continue to play the long game and to try once again, as I've said numerous times, maximize cash to yourself. It's not your job to manage the salary cap. It's not your job to worry about how this affects the Dallas Cowboys long term. And really what you're trying to do is obviously shorten the length of this deal, maximize cash to yourself early so you can get another bite at it here maybe 3-4 years down the road.
Yeah, and I think to Lou's point, I think the particulars are what we're focused on now. And in any contract situation, as I've been in one, Lou has been in one, when you get to these details, that means you pretty much have a good rapport going. That's what this tells me. Now it's about ironing out those things that you may be causing each side to be a little leery of how the deal is actually structured. But when it comes to Dak, I agree 100% with Lou. Why rush? What is the rush for? If you can belabor this and get to the point where you have the exact contract, the exact structure that you wanted, it seems to me Dallas is willing to go there with Dak based on all the discussions that have taken place up until this point, then why not wait? And then you look at this is almost in a positive way. So much of this global pandemic is affecting guys in a negative way, not being able to get in and get physicals, not having that face-to-face personal contact. This is a situation where the Cowboys know Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott knows the Cowboys. He knows the people in the makeup of that building, and having those advantages in his court, in his corner, is putting him in a great position to not only become the highest paid, but to get the structure that he wants playing quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He's in a great spot.
I checked in on this shortly before we went on air, and I sensed the greatest level of optimism getting this contract done between Dak Prescott and the Cowboys than I have in a long time. I now believe it's going to get done sooner than later. I don't think we'll be pushing it to mid-July. I think both sides want to get it done. They're talking. They're making progress. And I think the Cowboys and Dak Prescott will have a contract. I don't know whether it's 2 weeks, a week, 3 weeks, but I think it'll be well before the mid-July deadline.
Just wanted to make one more point here. If in the unlikely event that it doesn't happen and he has to play on the franchise tag this year, there's currently some dispute about how much money that tag would actually be worth. He got the exclusive franchise tag, remember, so that's the average of the top five salaries at his position for this year. That figure changed recently when Ben Roethlisberger and Kirk Cousins redid their deals. So the Cowboys and Dak Prescott are awaiting word from the NFL and the NFLPA on whether he's going to make $31.6 million this year or $28.6 million this year, which is the difference between the two figures if those restructures actually count. So that's one thing to keep in mind here as they continue to negotiate.
Dan, thank you. Dak Prescott has won 40 games since 2016. By the way, the only other quarterback to do that, Tom Brady. Speaking of which, the former Patriots quarterback, of course, now the QB of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Here's GM Jason Light on Get Up about the free agency period and what it took to ink Tom Brady.
As soon as Wednesday rolled around and we were able to talk to Tom Brady, we had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half, and he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay. And the following day, we signed him, but it was at that phone call that we realized that we felt like, we had him.
Marcus, Tom Brady recruiting the Bucs isn't exactly what you'd expect to hear. Was this surprising for you?
Actually, no, Wendy. When you have GOAT attached to your name, you pretty much do whatever the hell you want to do. You pick up the phone, you call a team and say, hey, this would be the best fit for me. Now figure out how to give me $60 million over the next 2 years and y'all call me back after y'all get that done. That is amazing, man. That's what he's earned in this league by being what he's been 20 years in the organization, playing at the highest level at his position. But man, Lou, I would have loved to become a free agency and reached out to the team in my destination and said, hey, here's why you need me. Now go figure out the money.
Well, Lewis, he's right. I mean, how do you say, hey, here's what we're going to do. Now you figure it out.
Yeah, I think, from talking to a few people, look, Tom really wanted to go ahead and really exercise as much control over this situation as possible. I mean, he orchestrated this thing from beginning to end as far as how he set up his contract in New England all the way down to him signing his contract in Tampa Bay. So this doesn't shock me at all. He identified a team that fit for him geographically. It fit for him contractually. It fit from him personnel-wise and what he would perceive to be from a relationship standpoint without having gone down there would fit for him as well. So to call them after 20 years of having done things one way and say, hey, look, Tampa Bay, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. This is why I'm good for you, why I think you're good for me. It doesn't shock me at all. I mean, he's earned that right, number one, to do those kind of things and try and dictate where he wants to go. Number two, he has the respect of everybody in the NFL. You know they're going to take his call and listen to him. And that's why it's really, it doesn't surprise me that things really moved pretty quickly after that. Because, look, if you're Tampa Bay, really, what were you going to do? You were going to say, well, Tom, we'll think about it. Well, we don't know if we can fit things around you. We don't know if we're the best spot for you. I mean, come on. I mean, it's perfect on his part, and I'm glad it worked out for both of them.
Yeah, I'd love to be in that office on the day they're like, Tom Brady on line one for you. Meanwhile, yeah. Tom Brady's former team moves on. Patriots defensive back Stephon Gilmore telling our Mike Reese he was not surprised by Tom Brady's departure, adding this on Jarrett Stidham, their current quarterback, or one of. He came in and worked hard and got better and better as the year went on. He has a strong arm. He makes some tough throws. Definitely made it hard on me in practice every week, going against whoever I was covering, making some great throws. It allowed me to get better in practice to prepare four games. Mort, listen, we're all talking about it. What do you think the Patriots' plans are at quarterback moving forward?
Well, let's remember, Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, was not blindsided by Tom Brady not returning to the team this year, because that goes back to last summer when kind of contract negotiations came to a wrap and Brady insisted on having his contract where it just ended. He was able to terminate it after this year, no franchise tag. So they knew in their mind, Belichick certainly did, he was likely looking at another quarterback situation in 2020. Jarrett Stidham, the fourth round pick out of Auburn a year ago, had an excellent preseason to the point where they actually cut Brian Hoyer, their very favorite journeyman veteran quarterback, who is now back with the Patriots. Because why? Nick Foles went to the Colts. Hoyer was on their roster. He got cut. Hoyer signs with the Patriots. Stidham is somebody they like a lot. Hoyer knows the offense. Stidham knows the offense on 1 year. Josh McDaniels is still the same offensive coordinator. I do expect him to probably draft one and maybe add another one as they assess going forward. But remember, in this type of situation we're in with the COVID-19 pandemic, time is going to be of the essence if and when this league gets rolling. And I believe the league believes it's when they get going, and having people familiar with your offense like Stidham and Hoyer, to me, it's going to be one of those two guys at the reins.
You make a great point, Mort. Listen, and we've talked about it in this situation, that continuity and that familiarity will serve great dividends. Lewis and Marcus, Lewis, starting with you, is Stidham the answer, the short-term answer at quarterback for the Patriots?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being the short-term option at this point in time. And look, and I don't say that with, you know, real trepidation in my voice. Look, I'm one of the people who believes that Jarrett Stidham, his best football is ahead of him. It's all ahead of him, and that for this kid, the sky is the limit. I know, look, at comparable points in their career, they believe that Jarrett Stidham is further along than even what Jimmy Garoppolo was at his point, at his second year, heading into his second year in this offense. Can they say definitively that Jarrett Stidham is going to continue to, you know, stay on that developmental arc and become, you know, one of those guys who can be a 13-14 game starter? No, they can't say that at this point, but I know that they like what they're seeing. I know they're comfortable with what he's doing. I know he did absolutely light it on fire during the preseason last year, and people will say, well, it was just the preseason. Well, that's all they have to go off of. Yeah, they will probably draft a young quarterback. As far as the veteran free agent market is concerned, look, no team is more economically driven than the New England Patriots. So if someone's going to go there as a veteran quarterback, they're going to come there on New England's terms, at New England's price, which isn't going to be very much. So I think it's all setting up for Jarrett Stidham to be that guy, as long as nothing happens as far as his performance, you know, as far as it taking a precipitous drop to where they totally lose confidence. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, one thing for me is obviously Bill Belichick and giving him credence at the fact that he can evaluate talent, and something that they've seen within this organization with Jarrett Stidham up until this point tells them that they feel comfortable with where their quarterback room is now. I 100% think that Mort is right and agree that they probably should draft a guy or try to bring in another veteran that can play and play at a high level. New England doesn't expect to fall off a cliff. They don't expect to be the New England of Tom Brady, but they don't expect to fall off a cliff. The Patriot way is about that organization and making sure that they play a certain way, they prepare a certain way, and they have a guy that they can trust. And I think that's the thing that's been missing, Lou, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the major things about Bill Belichick, I played for Nick Saban at LSU. I understand these coaching minds. I played for Bill Parcells with the Dallas Cowboys. They want guys that will take care of the football. They want guys that can throw, obviously, put balls in tight windows, score some points when need be. But the most important and valuable thing to coaches like Bill Belichick is a guy that can take care of the football and convert on third downs. And if they think that Jarrett Stidham can do that, they'll have him as the starter going in week one and feel confident with him going into games, because everything they do around him to protect him and make sure he's in the best possible situation to succeed.
Yeah, Marcus, I think if you go back to when the Patriots and Bill Belichick made the transition from Drew Bledsoe to Tom Brady, their team was based off defense and running the football, and then, you know, Tom gradually grew into being what he became, a six-time Super Bowl winner. But Belichick has been seeing this day coming, even with Tom Brady hitting this age point, that they were going to have to approach football differently. And let's not forget the last Super Bowl they won in Atlanta, seven against the Rams. That was a defensive game for them. And I think that Belichick is primed to have that approach this year with Stidham taking care of the football and them making progress and rebuilding this thing. I really believe they're a double-digit win team. 10 wins would not shock me.
Cam Newton was officially released by the Carolina Panthers last week. Now he's posted some workout video via Instagram over the weekend. Former teammate Gerald McCoy was asked about Cam on Marty Smith's America podcast. Here's what he said.
I truly believe that Carolina made a mistake letting Cam go. And I'm all for Teddy. And Teddy's getting everything he deserves. It's not personal towards Teddy. So let me say that right now. This is not a personal shot at Teddy Bridgewater. This could have been Andy Dalton. This could have been whoever they brought in. This could have been a rookie. It don't matter. It's not about who they brought in. It's about the fact that they let Cam go. And Cam has so much left. Somebody's getting a great one. Somebody's really getting a great one, man. And I don't think people really understand what they're getting.
Mort, really, since this news became official, we've tried to anticipate the market for Cam Newton. Where are we right now?
Well, I don't think it was good news for Cam Newton when the Washington Redskins and former Carolina Panthers coach Ron Rivera, who's really calling the shots on personnel, decided to trade for Kyle Allen, who was essentially the backup quarterback behind Cam Newton before Newton was hurt last year with the Panthers, to bring him in to compete with and support Dwayne Haskins, their first-round pick from a year ago. So they chose Kyle Allen as opposed to, hey, let's bring Cam Newton on in because he's just a better player. He's a former MVP. There's certainly some talk about the San Diego Chargers, but I think Anthony Lynn, the coach with the Chargers, he loves Tyrod Taylor. He thinks their defense is going to be one of the top five or six or seven in the NFL. The question is ownership going to be tempted to get a headliner like Cam Newton? Because one thing that Anthony Lynn, the coach, wants is a guy who would certainly be mobile and be capable of making plays with his legs. I will say this, the Panthers, their feeling is, hey, Cam may be healthy for the start of the season. They just did not have a level of confidence that he would stay healthy for the rest of the season.
All right, Marcus, should Cam Newton, in your estimation, be a starting quarterback in 2020?
Yeah, at some point, absolutely. Wendy, I would say Jacksonville could be one of those places. Obviously, they let Nick Foles walk, and they may be a little bit scorned on how that situation played out with an injury going into the season with Gardner Minshew starting, and I know everybody is crazy about him. But when you think about it, man, Cam, listen, this is just unfortunate territory that Cam Newton is in. The inability to go have a physical, the inability to make sure doctors say and clear him for certain teams that would be interested. This global pandemic has created this situation for not only Cam Newton, but Tua Tagovailoa that's coming out of school too. Because if you have questions about quarterbacks' durability, regardless of if you think they'll stay healthy or not, you're going to take a chance on guys with this amount of talent if you can get your hands on them. The problem is no one can get their hands on them because of what's happening in the world, in the real world. So I believe Cam is a start. I believe at some point we'll see Cam start, and I believe we'll see Cam play well at some point for the rest of his career, barring he doesn't have any more injuries. It's a hard thing for me to accept that Cam Newton can't be on a football team, highly productive, and make a team better at the quarterback spot. It's just hard for me to believe that.
Yeah, there's no question that Cam, at the very least, will be on a roster competing to be a starter, not just settling in as a backup, but competing to be a starter. And look, Marcus already mentioned there's two teams that he would compete to do that right now. Obviously, Jacksonville and for sure the LA Chargers. See, this is what's interesting to me about the LA Chargers. I know they're in a position to where at number six, they could go ahead and draft the future quarterback and use Tyrod Taylor as the bridge. But I'll tell you this. Look, I'll take Cam Newton over Tyrod Taylor every day of the week in a head-to-head competition, provided that he is healthy and that he can remain healthy. And I would be, if I'm Tom Telesco, I'm definitely looking at that situation where, look, this is a buyer's market, no question about it. I have all the leverage here. Cam already sees what the landscape looks like as far as the need for his services, and it's not very good. I think if I could get him on a deal that really favors my football club, I for sure, even if I am going to still draft the long-term future at number six, I'm still going to bring him in and see if I can let him compete with Tyrod Taylor. Because, look, we're talking about Tyrod is a just barely over 60% completion percentage for his career and just barely at 7 yards per attempt for his career. And the last time we saw him when he was in Cleveland, it wasn't like people were sitting there going, you know what, we can just sit Baker Mayfield on the bench here for the foreseeable future because Tyrod's tearing it up. And I know that Tyrod has a lot of support in the NFL, and people really like the fact that he's risk adverse, takes care of the football, doesn't take chances, has good mobility. Tyrod Taylor's not Cam Newton. It's as simple as that. So he deserves to be on a roster, no question. He deserves to be, at the very least, competing for a starting job. And I would not be shocked if at one of those two places, if they wound up signing him, he ends up being the starting quarterback.
And Marcus referred to this a little bit earlier, and we will continually, obviously, about the global pandemic and how this affects a guy like Cam Newton, who has a health history, a more frequently building health history, where teams are going to want to, if they want to look at him, they're going to want their own doctors, team of doctors, to get their hands on him and really give him a look over before they go forward with signing him.
Well, Mort, thank you. Cam isn't the only former number one pick on the market. Let's not forget there's Jameis Winston and Jadeveon Clowney. They, too, looking for new teams. And all three, as you all three know, have shown flashes in their NFL careers. Cam, of course, even winning an MVP. But each one, as we have noted, has also had their share of ups and downs. So, Mort, let's look at the other two, and we'll start with Jameis.
Yeah, Jameis Winston, a bad year to go into a contract where he didn't have one, and then Tom Brady's available. I had one team tell me, hey, the good news about Jameis Winston, he can make throws that Tom Brady can't. Bad news is he will make throws that Tom Brady won't. He has great physical ability. He has high work ethic. He's smart, good football IQ. Right now, the market is pretty much dead for him. We'll see if it picks up. And then Jadeveon Clowney, he has several teams interested in him, just not at his price point. He's another guy with a health history that is going to teams that want to bring in and put their hands on him and take a good look at him. He's never been a real double-digit sack guy, but he is a disruptor. Seattle Seahawks, the last team to have him. Yes, they would like to have him back, but not at that high $20 million plus range that Clowney may be looking for.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Not going to lie to you, I'm excited now.
So the NFL owners have agreed to accept a negotiated collective bargaining agreement. They did that on Thursday, which would allow a 17th regular season game and add two playoff teams. While the vote of the owners was not unanimous, it did meet the 3/4 threshold required for the owners to pass it. So again, here are some of the headlines out of that proposal. We would see an expanded playoff field next season, with each conference getting 7 teams in instead of 6. Again, it's important to note, this is the first change in the number of playoff teams since 1990, when there were only 28 teams.
That's right.
Now there are 32, so don't think we're watering it down, because that really isn't the case. But only one team gets a bye here, the number one seed in each conference. That is significant, because you're playing a 17-game regular season that wouldn't take effect until 2021 at the earliest. And with all of that being said, the money would increase for the players from 47% to roughly 48.5%. But Dan Graziano, our fine NFL reporter with the latest in the CBA talks just over a half hour ago, the NFLPA's decision on the CBA proposal will go to the full membership for a vote, regardless of the outcome of Friday's conference call with the team reps. Union leadership is being tasked with making a recommendation to the full membership. And we can also tell you that the executive committee of the NFL player reps voted 6-5 to not recommend the deal they've spent the last 10 months negotiating with the NFL. How does that happen? A man smarter than us is about to tell us. We're delighted to be joined by Dominic Foxworth, former player and former NFLPA president and part of the last CBA negotiations. Dominique, let's start with that part of it first. The executive committee worked with the NFL, worked with the PA to negotiate this deal. They brought it forth to the owners, and now they voted to not endorse it. What happened? Right.
So I think the way that it's being framed right now sounds as if they agreed to the deal and then they said they don't want it. The way that negotiations normally works is they'll send you a proposal, you'll send them a proposal. You'll discuss it and you'll say what you want to change, what you want to fix. Then you'll go back and adjust the proposal. All the executive committee, to me, what they're saying is this proposal that they gave to us, we believe that we can do better. This is not good enough. I'm not sure that they can actually do better, but I don't think it's as absurd as it seems like it's being presented for the executive committee to run out of time and negotiations and decide that what the final offer on the table, the owner's essentially saying, this is it, take it or leave it. If the executive committee sincerely believes that they can do better if given more time, then I think it's appropriate for them to say, leave it. I'm not sure that they can do better, though. That's the question.
Okay, so let's deal with that part of this first, because the way it was presented from what we were able to understand from both sides is this was something that had been worked out and said these are the, I mean, the NFLPA put out a fact sheet, say these are the things in the deal. And the NFL said, yes, we agree to these things. And now it feels like unless we've been presented wrong, whoa, that wasn't the full negotiated deal. We'd like to add some more things.
No, I think that you can't, the way that, and sometimes it's a negotiation tactic, but the way that Roger Goodell kind of operated in the last CBA negotiations was we would give him a proposal and he'd say, I like it. However, I need to go back and take it to my members and see how they feel. Then you go to they go to the owners and he comes back and says, they're not going to accept this. Like, it's something to try to create some artificial leverage. I don't think that in this case it's necessarily artificial, but it's not unusual for you to leave negotiations thinking you have a deal, then come out and come back with a marching order from your members saying that you need to get a better deal. I don't think that that's completely inconsistent with the way negotiation works. It happening at this last moment, I think, is a little scary, and that's part of it. You want to walk up to the edge. That's how you get the most that you can, is kind of try to convince the other side that you are willing to enter into some sort of war of attrition and hope that they back down and hope that they blink and try to intimidate them with the leverage that you have. The problem is, I'm not sure the NFL players have the leverage that they think they do going into this, and I would also understand that maybe when Jeff and I went through the negotiations, a huge sticking point was health and safety. We really kind of revamped everything and took away all as much of the kind of free hits to the head, essentially like practices, as we could. If these players and executive committee believe that health and safety is of the utmost importance, I can understand them saying that there is no condition under which I would endorse the idea of adding a 17th game, another week's worth of collisions to these players' health and their long-term health. So, like, I can understand coming to this position. I'm not sure I would have the guts to do it, but I can understand why they would end up there.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because we talked about this earlier today when we had John Golic and Wingo this morning, 6 to 10 Eastern, ESPN Radio and ESPN 2.
Well done.
Thank you very much. The issue then is, because it does seem like the NFL wants to get this done. I mean, we heard Adam Schefter say, you know, Roger Goodell would like this thing done to announce it at the Combine next week. But we do have time here, right? I mean, we have a CBA that goes through this season, so we really have until the start of the 2021 season. And the last time, even though there was a lockout, there were no games that were missed.
Yeah, and I think that's probably part of the estimation by the executive committee, but I think Roger Goodell and the owners really want to get this deal done now, because it gets much more difficult to get the executive committee and get the players ready and get them into negotiations once the season starts. And also, the most important thing is the TV deals. And I think the sooner they can get a guarantee of 10 years of labor peace without an opt-out, they have more leverage to start to negotiate those big TV deals, which means a bigger pie for everybody. Because I assume that's what Roger Goodell would tell the players if he had a line directly to them now, is the longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to be for us to maximize the revenue from the TV deals. And they feel like they could get stuck between a rock and a hard place at the end of this. If they don't get a deal done until towards the end of next season, that they won't be able to generate the amount of revenue out of that they can. And they won't be able to add another game to this season or playoff game to this season, which is also immediate revenue that they won't be able to recoup.
I think that's an excellent point. Dominique, thanks very much. We appreciate your time. And the insights as a former NFLPA president. I think what he just said there is very interesting,
right? Yes.
Because
That's what exactly happened the last time around in 2011. As soon as the new CBA was done, amazingly, boom, 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 new television deals all the way around for all the television partners, whether it's ESPN, Fox, NFL Network, CBS, NBC. That's going to happen again here. Do we think there's any benefit then for the union to say, hey, we have 17 months. Why are we in such a rush to get this done?
Yeah, that's their leverage right now. Absolutely. And I would argue that that's obviously a reason why the NFL, to your point and to his point, want to get this through. It is a point of leverage, but to Jeff's point earlier, you don't know what deal is going to be on the table a year from now. Maybe the incentive of the NFL getting it done now is drawn back, and all of a sudden they're saying, we're going to fight for
every penny.
Yeah, every penny. And by the way, it was expressed to me a day or 2 days ago when the owners found out that they were going to New York. I was talking with one league executive asking how this meeting yesterday amongst owners was being billed. And he said, it's a chance for them to tell us where we're at, decide whether we want to move forward with it or go to war. Okay, that's a pretty firm stance.
Right.
Oh, that's a big one or the other, guys.
And that's where it's interesting because, again, if the players feel like by waiting they're going to do better, again, as it was reported yesterday, the owners are not unanimous on this either. So right. They got to be really careful. Jeff, you lived it in 2011. It's really messy when you get into a lockout. I know I was running the Jets at the time. There's a lot of uncertainty for both sides. You know, as you mentioned, Trey, teams lay off people. But when players start missing paychecks, fear does the work of reason in negotiations, and they may be looking at taking a deal that's not nearly as good as this one. I was reading what was reported last night. We talked about it. This deal has a lot of good elements for both sides. Is it perfect? No. But when you're in negotiations, you try to get the best deal possible. And again, if you play this thing out, I just think the players have a lot to lose because if you really want to blow this up, you're looking at litigation and a lot of uncertainty.
Right. And let's go down that road here for a minute because I think an appropriate way to look at this is to look at history from another sport. All right, baseball had something called the reserve clause for many years. Basically, mm-hmm. when your contract was over, they still owned your rights. And Kirk Flood challenged that legally with Marvin Miller, and it went through many ramifications and many legal battles. And at the end of the day, the reserve clause was gone in baseball, and that's what got us free agency. But you know who didn't benefit from that?
Kirk Flood.
Kirk Flood.
That's right.
It cost him his career. Basically, he laid down, he was willing to, he was hoping it wouldn't, but he had to lay down his career to get the thing that now everybody benefits from in Major League Baseball. For the NFL players to get what they want, let's say it's health care for life, more money, and not have to play a 17th game, or much more money to play that 17th game, you're looking at about 400 Kirk Floods. Because there's so much turnover in this sport that there are guys who basically have there's a lot of guys in this league who are basically, it's a four-year cash grab for me, and then I got to figure something out. Are they willing to say, I respect and need so much for the future of this game that I'm going to throw away potentially $4 to $5 million? That's never going
to
happen.
Right, right. I mean, listen, to get to that point, even where Mike and you are taking it, you're talking about decertification, you're talking about nothing, you're talking, I mean, And for the amount of time, it's not just your future paychecks that you're going to miss out on. It's years of play that you're going to get replaced. College football is not stopping.
Right.
They're continuing to put out. You know, they're putting
younger,
out
faster
the product. You're the product now. They're trying to bump you out. And so as that cycle continues and moves on, it's very difficult because to your point, it is a very small window. I will say this about the deal. Whether you love the deal, hate the deal, one thing that I'm very appreciative of the deal is this is a lower tier player driven deal.
Yes.
So it's immediately going to help minimum wage guys or minimum salary guys. Let's say they're 585 right now. They'll be 685 or more starting next year. In 2020, it impacts today, right? Practice squad guys will have tuition increases, health care increases. So the guys that you're talking about in the long term are not – they're worried about their life after football. They're worried about, you know, they're worried about those things. It's not just all about how much cash can they make right now and accumulate right now. It's the future of these guys. Can they get vested? Can they last long enough to get vested? If you're going to miss 2 years, probably not going to get vested, right, because you're going to get replaced. So it's all of those things that go into the conversation. And I will say this. I agree with Fox 100%. You're not scared today. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, you could be as bold as you
beat
want today, man.
Right,
be fired up. Right. And I get that. But I have been in meetings when I shut them down And it changes a man and his wife and his kids and everybody else when you look at him and go, you're not going to get paid most likely for the next year.
Yeah.
So whatever you've been doing, just understand. Go get another job. However this thing looks at, and to your point, it's going to take 400. It takes more than 400, right?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about negotiating for 1,700 plus guys every time you're doing this, and the future guys. And so this is a large decision. There's nothing easy about it. It is the give and take of a negotiation. But I'm telling you, when you get to those meetings and those conversations, they are very difficult and they are very intense.
And that's why it is a completely different negotiation for the Russell Wilsons, the Richard Shermans,
absolutely,
the Ben Roethlisbergers of the world, than they are for the Gunners on the punt team.
Right.
Because you are coming at this from completely different perspectives. We'll keep you updated throughout the day should this story change another 400 times. But off the air. So, just 26 days until Tommy, TB12, can become a free agent. Our Adam Schefter has previously reported the Raiders have interest in the veteran QB, and a number of other teams are expected to be in the mix, including, you know, New England. Brady has been tight-lipped about the process, which brings us to this. Let's do some myth-busting. Myth or fact? Brady edition, as we continue here on NFL Live. Now, if you were listening to Golic and Wingo, 6 to 10 Eastern, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Yesterday, Jeff was on with Mike Golic Jr. and I, and we went deep down the rabbit hole.
We sure did.
I mean, we went, you know, Bigfoot type stuff with Tom Brady.
Right.
So let's do a little bit of this now just for fun, shall we? But first, let's do some myth-busting.
Yeah, let's do it. Fact or fiction.
So let's start with this one. You tell me if this is fact or fiction. Tom Brady's going to need to play for a team in the Northeast because he's bought a house in the Tony, New York suburbs of Greenwich, Connecticut. Is that fact or fiction?
That is fiction. And this is one of those things that no matter how many people tell you that it's not true, people, your Greenwich blogs keep trying to say that it is true. Tom Brady has not bought
Greenwich doesn't need Tom.
A house.
Tom needs Greenwich.
Tom has not bought a house in Greenwich, and he is not tied to any region at this point. He can go wherever he wants. He is very truly, at this point, regionally and otherwise, a free agent.
Okay, so he's not in Greenwich. By the way, you should be, Tom. It's wonderful. Great school system. next one. There's a very good chance Tom Brady has played his last game in a Patriots uniform.
That is fact.
Bang!
That is something that people seemingly still can't wrap their heads around, the idea that Tom will leave the Patriots. This is very real at this point. I can tell you that Tom Brady is certainly exploring in his mind and outlining places, potential destinations other than the Patriots. It's very real. Could he still wind up with the Patriots? Yes, he could. I ask you this. How much faith do you have in the conversation that will occur between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick that is going to be a very difficult one for a number of reasons to make enough headway to where Brady stays with the Patriots? It is more likely than not right now that he's gone.
If this had been wanted to be wrapped up by the Patriots, they could have wrapped it up by now. He was begging for a contract extension in the preseason. All right, item number three. Tom Brady knows where he's going to sign. He's just waiting until March 18th to finalize it.
That is fiction, and I keep hearing a lot of that. People just conspiring that they assume that Tom Brady at this point has tampered and that he knows where he's going and he is signing here or there. I can tell you right now that he has a list of teams that have not even reached out to him yet. There have been no such negotiations. I can tell you this as well. Everybody's kind of petrified right now of making a move. I think everybody is afraid because Tom Brady is such a big name of potentially tampering. Right now, it feels to me like everybody's trying to be a Boy Scout with this one.
Okay, then there's this. Tom Brady's going to try and make his decision without it becoming a crazy circus in NFL cities. Meet here, greet and greet here. Do a tour, basically.
He does not want this to become a distraction.
So that's a fact.
That is a fact. I can tell you right now that Tom Brady would like to avoid making this a Peyton Manning-type tour. Nothing against the way that Manning did it.
Sure.
He did it his way. I would expect instead for this to be a clear, concise type of free agency period where Tom makes his decision and goes to that respective team, whether the Patriots or otherwise.
And as you say, it's more likely than not at this point that it will not be the Patriots. So that leads us, Mike Tannenbaum, to the New England Patriots. If Tom Brady is not their quarterback in 2020... who is it? Is it Jared Stidham? Is it free agency? Is it the draft? Is it a combination of all three?
I think it's the last. I think it's a combination of all three. And the one player to me that checks a lot of boxes, and I work for Coach Belichick a couple times, processing information is really important to him. So Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals, presumably they're going to draft Joe Burrow, I think really aligns with what Coach Belichick's vision for the quarterback position is. And if you have Dalton, a young Stidham, it also leaves optionality there to maybe draft a player as well.
Wow, that's a major come up for Dalton.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
From Cincy to New England to massive chaos all the time. To concise.
Well, according to Jeff, we got Tom Brady leaving the Patriots to go to massive chaos in Dallas. Yes, and Andy Dalton would leave massive chaos in Cincinnati and go to the Patriots.
Let's stir the pot.
Back to the Patriots. Or, by the way, you know, Ryan Tannehill. There's a number of names that could wind up being available potentially for him.
Could Dak go to New England after Tommy goes
sure.
to Dallas?
No, I don't know.
He's risk averse and he doesn't throw a lot of interceptions.
You know, Jeff D's suggestion before that, if, you know, because of the Brady-Vrabel sort of connection, Ryan Tannehill going to New England where they're almost swapping teams. Mm-hmm. I could see that as well. So that's another one to keep an eye on.
Can flip with Jimmy Garoppolo.
That's Jimmy, the one. If you want to get crazy, let's do that one, right?
That's the most fun.
Why is it so
crazy? It is by far the most fun because Tom is from there. He grew up.
But why is it so unrealistic?
I don't think it is. Other people think it. I love it.
That's the thing. Everybody acts like the second you mention any team, like San Francisco, by the way, they could get out of Jimmy's deal for a pretty minimal amount, like $4 million. It's Tom Brady. Like, nothing should feel that crazy, whether it's the Cowboys, San Francisco, Tennessee, the Bucks. Yeah. I mean, Miami. You can go across the board, and it's not that crazy.
Why I push back on that one is you're 6 minutes away from being Super Bowl champions with a young quarterback you have under contract that fits with that team. He missed a throw. That one just doesn't make sense.
Here's why, because that Super Bowl came down to two things. Quarterback, go win us the game. Quarterback, don't lose us the game. And when he had to make the throw that was there for them to take the lead in the final minutes of the game, he missed him by 6 yards.
I like Jimmy G.
Yeah.
The 49ers like Jimmy G. I just think that we're talking about somebody. This is a historical moment. Tom Brady, I get it. He's older. But he's still Tom Brady.
I'm not so sure you're not better off with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Don't look at me like that.
You love Tommy.
Tom Brady's going to be 43. I'm not so sure for the 49ers that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't give him a better chance to win in 2020 than a 43-year-old Tom Brady.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Is Patrick Mahomes still in the league?
I'm not sure.
I don't like their chances.
I'm not sure. I will say this about the offense. For Tom Brady, we talked about this yesterday, Honor. That offense, in my opinion, would be good for Brady and Shanahan, the way he operates and the way he
does. Running game?
I like that. Like
that offensive
fit,
line.
Yeah, that fit to
that
me.
That works
now.
For me.
Yes, sir.
Debo over the top.
Yes, sir.
Professional chain mover, potentially Emmanuel Sanders
exactly,
underneath.
Exactly right.
I like that.
You got a lot of pieces
Brady.
And
I'm
parts
just saying.
That you feel. Yeah. If I'm Tom Brady, hey, those hey, are the kind of places
hey,
I'm
hey,
looking at.
Hey, now you're coming on my side.
No, I've already put that yesterday. I did it big.
Breaking news. Jeff Darlington says Tom Brady will sign with the San Francisco 49ers.
I'm just trying to say every team so later I can go back
and say I was right.
Well, one team we know, because you should find someone in your life at one time to look at you the way Mark Davis looked at Tom Brady during the Conor McGregor Cowboy Cerrone fight. So, you know, he may be going there. Derek Carr posted this on Instagram. It's just a picture of Khalil Mack and Derek Carr with no caption. This, of course, needs a caption. So, Jeff Saturday, what's your caption there?
Tommy's headed west. See you in Chi-Town.
Mike, what's your caption
for that one?
What's your caption for that loving shot of those two former teammates?
Trade rumors are swirling in the Windy City.
Oh, nicely done.
You also love that. With such pride, they're saying.
Darlington?
Sorry, Mitch. That was the funny thing to me is, like, you know, Derek's acting like he's super offended, but he's willing to go in there and take somebody else's job. That's the way it works. It's the NFL.
The only thing I thought of when I looked at it was, yeah, Cleveland Furl ain't you, babe.
Yeah.
That's just the way that goes. Now, that kid, they got Max Williams. He could be good. Cleveland Furl is not Khalil Mack.
No.
That's just the way that goes, and that's the way I think it would be. But